Follow me and ponder the question. What if?
Swamp Kittens Assemble. Welcome back, everybody, to I Want My MCU TV. You may have noticed that tonight sounds a little different. We are here covering the entire first season of What If? And we've got a number of twists, much like some of the episodes here. And one of those is, what if Lisa got a better offer from a murder lizard that rolled up wearing some pretty impressive headgear and isn't with us this evening, which means it's up to Kelly to start the show down the rails so that everyone else can take it off entirely. So I am your host tonight, Kelly Gamont. With me this evening, I have my longtime podcasting partner in crime, Don Melton. Hi, Don.
Howdy, howdy.
And with us tonight, a special guest wearing one of those life model decoy faces of Lisa, we have Nathan Alderman. Hi, Nathan.
I want so much to participate, but I am sworn never to interfere.
Oh, it's going to be that kind of show, kids. So buckle up. We are here to talk about the first season of What If? And we're here to talk about it in the context of the other episodes we have received already and see kind of how we feel about everything overall. So, Nathan, since my notes here tell me that you have talked the least on I Want My MCU TV so far, I'd like to give you the opening salvo.
The benefits of being the guest star. Well, I think this show was, and I do not mean to damn with faint praise, I think it was a confection. It was a trifle. It was dessert. We had the appetizer with WandaVision. We had a main course that was maybe like a little too overstuffed, but it was really well prepared and lots of interesting ingredients in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Then we had like an incredible second main course in Loki. And this is like the after dinner mint. This is a treat. It's fun. It's there so that you can hear various famous people voicing cartoon versions of things that would be too expensive to film in live action. And it doesn't have to be anything.
Or too stupid. Yes.
Yes, there's that. Oh, no. There is nothing in the show. Okay, maybe the zombies episode. Other than that, nothing in the show is too stupid to be filmed in live action. But yeah, it doesn't have to be anything more than that. And I really enjoyed it. There were episodes I liked more than others. We can talk about how Killmonger got done dirty in a big way. No offense to Michael B. Jordan. He was awesome as always.
That's, I think, why it felt done dirty. Just to go ahead and jump in there. Because we wanted better for him.
Well, yeah, so just to jump to wade right into the swamp kitten infested waters here. The best episodes of the show are ones where characters have an arc. You get the arc in Captain Carter, where, you know, Peggy goes from being this, you know, pushed aside nobody to a super soldier who is willing to sacrifice after she's found love. It's the same essential arc as Captain America, but it's still an arc. And it's great because, y'all, I love me some Captain Carter. I just shoot Carter right into my veins. But this, you know, I was rewatching T'Challa Lord last night. What if T'Challa was Star-Lord? He has an arc in that. Mm-hmm. You've got an arc in the Doctor Strange episode. You've got an arc in the wacky, you know, John Hughes movie starring Thor episode. Zombies episode, no arc. Killmonger episode, no arc. He starts off as an evil bastard and he ends as an evil bastard. And we don't even get to see the fulfillment of his evil bastard plan. So, yeah. The best episodes in this series, the most compelling ones, were ones where characters had an arc, and the less successful ones, even fun ones like the conspiracy murder mystery episode 3, were the ones where characters didn't really grow or change or learn anything. Mm-hmm. They were just like, what if this cool thing happened? Then what if this cool thing happened? Okay, cool things have happened. Bye now.
You know, now that you put it that way, I'm realizing that that's the thing about those that I didn't like. They were set up. And the reason I kept saying after some of these episodes, the reason my assessment of it was, I really want to see the second episode. Like, they've set this up and now I want to see what happens now that we've gotten, you know, what we got. And it's because there was no arc for anybody in those. Like, we get everything set up. Loki goes to address the UN and I'm like, cool. Like, show me what happens. And, you know, we don't really get that. And that was part of what I didn't like about that episode, was it didn't feel complete when we were watching those. But it never occurred to me that it's because nobody has any arc. It just felt like setup to me, because like everybody's kind of in the same place at the end of the episode that they were at the beginning. So now that you put it that way, that I think that's the thing about them that hangs me up. Don, what about you?
I would agree. They were all teases. And I'm glad that we were able to come back around in a few places. But again, this goes to my whole thing about, I don't mind alternate history for real history. But in some ways, this is kind of like, you know, bad fanfic. And this is why I never actually liked the What If comics from Marvel, or the Impossible Stories comics from DC. And it was like, well, you know, I don't care about that, because that's not going to go anywhere. I mean, that's the kind of thing me and my other 11-year-old friends think up on the playground.
Yes.
You know, I want sort of a unified field theory. Now, we got a little bit of that, which I was glad to see in episodes 9 and 10, where it brought things around and we saw, you know, the multiverse sort of fitting together.
Yeah.
But I agree that the payoff in 10, it wasn't a real end of the arc for everybody. It was still kind of clunky. Some people got done dirty. Other people, it was just too easy. As I said last episode, the ending was so Deus Ex Machina that it just real, you know, when my sister taught me how to tell stories, one of the first things she taught me was, you know, you don't end things like that, you know, with the fantastic escape. It works when you're a toddler, but it doesn't work when you're a grown up. And I just thought I wanted something a little bit more grown up. That said, there were a couple of episodes I genuinely liked. For example, the very first episode with Captain Carter. I could have watched the entire series tracking that universe.
Yes.
It just kind of felt like an interesting vibe.
It was also the perfect introduction, I felt like, for people who don't know anything about What If, this was the perfect introduction for what that is and kind of what those rules are. And I think that's where I went wrong. So Nathan, when you were done at the end of Captain Carter, because I've started, I'm actually taking a poll about this. So at the end of Captain Carter, did you feel like we were going to get a bunch of individual stories that were part of a larger unit of entertainment? Or did you think we were getting a stack of one-offs that were all going to be Captain Carter style?
I would like to say that I thought we were getting a stack of one-offs, but I had already seen some advanced merchandise illustration where they touted Captain Carter, T'Challa Lord, you know, et cetera, as the guardians of the multiverse. So I figured they had to be building to something, but this is what Marvel does, for good or ill. Its whole thing, it's the whole thing that it has done, that it did first in the movies and has done better than anyone else, is telling an interconnected story where you can enjoy each piece on its own, but they all fit together into a larger narrative. Everything counts, everything matters. And that is both, you know, a strength, and it can be a constraint and a weakness. So far, they have managed to work around it really well. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good in this case because they had so many unfinished payoffs that they did build to a story, so that you didn't end up feeling, oh, and then zombie Thanos appears and we never hear anything again. At least we got like a callback to that later on in the story. But I mean, I think this is more successful than the What If comics, at least the ones that I read when they revived it in the 90s, because the What If comics, I never really enjoyed reading them because they were relentlessly depressing. And I think it was like a very clever way for Marvel Comics to abuse its audience while making money off them, like having them pay for the privilege. It was a way, and this may not be my own idea. I may have read it somewhere else.
No. That's not the first time Marvel has done that either.
Yeah.
That's fair. Well,
you could argue that most of the 1990s was Marvel abusing its audience and making them pay for it. But the idea is that it's Marvel's writers and editors' way of saying, we told the best possible story. There's no way it could ever have been better. Oh, you think you can do better? You think we should have done it differently? Look, the entire world blows up and everyone dies. Because that's what happened every single time. So I like that this show had at least a mix of happy and downbeat endings, and that at least some of the downbeat endings felt earned. Like Doctor Strange's story worked because it was set up as a tragedy.
I didn't have as much hang up with that one. And I think that is part of why, because it felt like that's where we were going. Now, I was sort of surprised by it. But I think at that point I was still feeling like, are these one-offs? Like, are we supposed to be just sort of like, oh, okay, well, that's an interesting story. It just so happens to end with the end of the world. So I think that was part, like I said, that was partly my issue, because it still felt a little bit like they were trying to have it both ways. Like maybe there's some things that sort of cross episodes. Like maybe we see Captain Carter pop up again somewhere briefly, or, you know, we see Black Widow again later, you know, things like that. But that was part of where my frustration came from. And we had a little therapy here on the show talking about that, because I found it really frustrating. And Lisa quantified it as having, like, they were trying to have it both ways for too long into the episode, into the season. And I think that's the part that that was where I started getting aggravated with it, was like, are we going anywhere or not? And I think that was why it sort of didn't feel like it initially. So if I had gone in having already seen Guardians of the Multiverse toys, then maybe at that point I would have been like, well, I know we're going somewhere, so I'm a little less upset about this. But I remember reading a bunch of those one-off comics and feeling like, oh, you know, this might be kind of fun. And that was, you know, and then we got Captain Carter, which seemed to sort of confirm that. So that was where I felt like, well, okay.
They did something very clever. It was sort of a subliminal way of letting you know throughout the season visually that this was going somewhere. If you watch the early episodes, and this was deliberate, I've read interviews with the creators, the Watcher starts out as an outline filled with star stuff, and then gradually becomes more and more and more of a human figure as he goes from being a narrator to a character.
Yeah.
And I think that was their way of saying, this is building to something. And they start dropping hints, like when Doctor Strange can briefly perceive the Watcher in his episode.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But the best episodes of the show remember and build upon the character work for the movies, which is what the best Marvel movies do. Doctor Strange's episode has him lose because he forgets the lesson that he learns in the Doctor Strange movie, which is that you have to be willing to lose sometimes to win. And I loved in the final episode when Strange remembers that and puts it into action. When he realizes, like, you know, we have to let Ultron win in order for us to win.
Don, I think I can hear you nodding vigorously over there.
Yes, I am nodding vigorously. Sorry. I need to a little bit more in these things. And so I was actually just looking through the episode list, and I was like sort of mentally ranking the episodes about the ones that I enjoyed and trying to figure out why. And obviously the first episode is one of my favorites, the Doctor Strange episode. That's episode 4.
Well, and you're not biased at all. I know that Captain America was one of your favorites of the Marvel movies. So
yes. Yeah. And Doctor Strange was always a favorite character from the comics and one of the favorite movies. And then episode 7, What If Thor Were an Only Child, just simply because it is just so zany in a good way. Mm-hmm. And Chris Hemsworth as Party Thor. I got to agree with Lisa. He is my favorite Disney princess now.
Mm-hmm. Everyone in that episode is killing it. Natalie Portman is having more fun than she did in either of the first two Thor movies. And you could hear
right?
it.
Yeah.
Right. And I just hope she has that much fun in the next Thor film too. The other episode I have to say that I liked simply because it started to actually wrap things up was episode 8, What If Ultron Won? Mm-hmm. And then I was disappointed by episode 9. I misspoke before. I said episode 10, thinking there were 10 episodes, but it's actually 9 is the last episode.
Okay.
But I think those four, I went, you know, those I would watch again. But
yeah.
Would I watch all of them again? I'm not sure. I have to be honest.
I got to speak up for even like the weakest episodes of the series, like the zombies one. I'd never liked Marvel Zombies as a comic. It was cruelty that thought it was cleverness. It was just a nasty piece of work, and it didn't, there wasn't any point to it other than to be a nasty piece of work. And they made it less vicious and awful in this version, but it still was just a dumb concept. But even there, like, the improbably named Hudson Thames gave just an incredible performance as Peter. Evangeline Lilly gave a beautiful, beautiful performance as Hope Van Dyne in that episode. And there are clever little jokes and things like zombie Happy Hogan going blam after he's zombified. You know, the chillingness of Paul Bettany's performance in that. It's Paul Rudd Bettany making dad jokes.
Yeah, Bettany is always good. Everything he does.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's even correct. Even the quote unquote worst of these episodes have some great moments and great lines. I mean, like the Killmonger episode has that fantastic line, "The difference between you and me is that you can't see the difference between you and me." Mm-hmm. Also, yes. Michael B. Jordan getting to say, "I like anime."
What? I like anime. Yeah. That was, I think, what I found the most frustrating about that episode and about us getting the introduction to Killmonger. I never really understood what it was that he was unhappy about, and then never got to see any of the payoff or anything for what he got out of all of that. And
he's
that
a mystery in his own story. We never get inside his head. He's always like the antagonist, the outside force. And, you know, it's his story, but they focus so much on Tony and Pepper, which, not great, guys. Not great. Yeah.
And for a bunch of reasons. And I think part of what I found irksome about that was, again, our dear Lisa, he's one of her favorite villains. So like, as soon as he showed up on the screen, I was super pumped because we were going to have a great conversation here about him and his deal and like what he got to do. And it sounds like they got Michael B. Jordan to do it. So like, we got, you know, full strength Killmonger, not from Concentrate, and, you know, was super excited about all of it. And then he didn't really get to do anything, and he didn't really get like,
nothing about him changes in that episode. Nothing about him is different. It's just, he just started his plan sooner and in a slightly different way. But he, the most enjoyable thing about these episodes, the best ones, has been seeing how just the slightest nudge, the slightest shift could take these characters in a different direction.
Right. Because these are character pieces.
That said, the one that I thought took things in the most unique, unexpected way, and it wasn't necessarily with the main character, it was all the other characters. What if Shala became a Star Lord?
Oh, that is so delightful. I was just rewatching that yesterday. But it does, because, you know, Chadwick Boseman, he got to be sweet and kind and noble, but he never got to be like roguish like he does in there. He never got to be the trickster. And so even he got to be something a little different than we'd seen. But oh my gosh, yeah. Who never told me that Jaimin Hunsu was funny? I want to know who has been keeping this from me for so many years.
Well, we got that from a lot of the episodes, you know, like there's a lot more humor in some of the folks that we know and love as superheroes than we initially got out of all the Marvel stuff.
Yeah. You know, by the way, speaking of Jaimin Hunsu, he's another one of those people who is never an A-list person. But when he's in something, I know I'm always going to have a nugget. You know, there's just that enjoyable part no matter what he does. And so he was delightful. But I thought it was great. The take of Thanos in this episode, a lot of people just were, they were just ripping, you know, rending their garments, tearing their shirts off in there. Like, how could you do something like that? And I just thought it was terrific. Not only that they got the original actor for it, but there's another thing is that man can do comedy. And he can do it quite well, too.
And he does it completely deadpan. He is playing the same character the same way, but because the lines are different and the character's different, it's hilarious. I love funny Thanos. I love he gets to be like a sweet, loving dad in the end.
Yes, exactly. And it's a lesson to all you knuckleheads out there about how to do comedy. Comedy is not, you know, putting your hand under your armpit and flapping your arm to make farting sounds. I mean,
wait, it's not
comedy. Yeah. Well, yeah, not, not past grade kidding. School.
Not exclusively.
Not exclusively.
But also, okay.
Yeah. The thing, I think I brought this in the, up in the, either that episode or one of the other episodes, but I heard Gene Wilder talk about this years ago. And he said, you know, people sometimes don't understand comedy. And he didn't even say that he had like authored the statement, but the whole thing about being funny and making comedy is you have to take what you're doing seriously, right? You have to play it straight for it to be funny.
Yeah.
And many of the people here totally got that. The cast got that. And then it struck me what Marvel has been doing for, how long has the Cinematic Universe been around?
Oh my goodness. 17
years?
17
now?
Years, I think we figured out last
time. No, because it started in 2008. So
2008. Okay, so it's...
Oh, it did?
Well, it's...
13...
13 years? 14 years. Whatever. The thing is...
Yes, Iron Man was 2008, so however long ago that was. What even is time?
They told me there was not going to be any math. So what I'm saying is Marvel has actually been hiring for a lot of these positions, comedic actors.
Yes.
Or just by dumb luck, finding out that these actors who look like these characters were great at comedy. Chris Hemsworth. Yes. Is a great example. I mean, who knew he was hysterical beforehand? And if you saw, you know, Josh Brolin in No Country for Old Men, which is, you know, that is one upbeat date movie.
What a laugh a minute seen. Film, man.
Well, yeah. Let me point out that he was also in The Goonies, and I've seen him be funny.
Yes, that is true.
So
that is true. Yeah. But he was practically a small child then.
No, he was. He was a teenager, and that's fine. Part of what I did enjoy about watching all these, and part of what I've enjoyed about this, I guess sort of phase three is the kicking open of the door of what you can make that's still a Marvel movie and the way that they went through, the way that they've been doing that. Cause we've had a heist movie. We had a buddy movie. We had a spy movie. Like we've had all these different kinds of things that are 100% a Marvel movie. And that was sort of like, and that was one of the things that I was appreciating about the TV shows is every one of these shows feels like a piece of Marvel work for good or ill, whatever that means to you. It absolutely feels like a piece of like something that Marvel's had their hands all over, but every one of them is a very different show. And that's part of what, that's part of what I have appreciated about these is how different all of them are. So we get, you know, WandaVision, which, you know, I'm almost glad for unfortunate timing and extenuating circumstances because it means that we got our introduction to Marvel doing TV shows in the form of a TV show that is commenting on TV shows. And
it don't get more meta than that, does it?
Right. Like they, you know, like it was a surprise to me to find out that they told us later, like, that wasn't how we wanted things to go, because it felt like perfection to have given us that introduction. So that's part of what was interesting to me about these was, you know, that particularly with What If, what I was looking forward to was seeing, again, what still counted as a Marvel TV show. And, you know, and that was part of where I thought, like, oh, each episode being individual was going to be something very interesting, because that's not a thing that we know Marvel for doing in their video based entertainment is, you know, here's the thing and this one thing, and that's at the end. So that was kind of what I wanted out of them, honestly. And so getting to see how each of these is, you know, because like the Falcon and the Winter Snowman is a buddy movie. Like it's just a, you know, a long series of buddy movie. You know, we got that. We got the sitcom, you know, sort of your standard issue sitcom from each decade with WandaVision. And we got, you know, the nice big scale sci-fi and, you know, more buddy stuff with Loki. You know, like we could watch
but
the
really
two of
when
them
you think about it
all day long.
That's a detective story.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It is.
Yeah, lately story. Marvel has been doing like two different things. That's what made What If interesting, I guess, from a meta perspective, because each of these things was like its own genre, but it was only one thing. So Captain Carter was like your classic World War II movie, like Captain yes. America was. T'Challa Lord was, you know, a wacky heist caper. You had a zombie movie. You had a paranoid conspiracy thriller. You had a John Hughes teen comedy. you know, you had the post-apocalyptic. I really loved the way they had Ultron break the fourth wall in episode 8. Like the Watcher is there narrating away, and then Ultron looks right at him. On the main podcast, The Incomparable was discussing Rear Window and the indelible moment when Raymond Burr looks directly at the camera and Jimmy Stewart and the audience all know we've been busted. The guy we've been watching sees us too. Mm-hmm. And that was just an equally wonderful, chilling, form-breaking moment here. But but they're only, the What If episodes have been only one thing. For example, like when I watched Black Widow recently, I hadn't seen it until it came on Disney Plus. I really loved how it was this combination of superhero film, yes, spy film, yes, but also like a Steven Spielberg-esque fractured family drama slash comedy.
We've got a bunch of squishy family stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm really, it's interesting to see them combine those things. And I think that's, they're going to have to, as they get more and more and more product that they have to get out the door in order to keep it fresh and interesting, they're going to have to start blend, not only experimenting with genre, but blending genres in ways we haven't necessarily seen before. But What If doesn't need to do that? Because like I said, it's just the after dinner mint. It's the bowl of sorbet, the palate
cleanser.
But
that is the thing I liked about it, because it was animated. So it was like the comic books had come to life in like its finest moments. That was the thing I know both Lisa and I really liked. That was sort of what I was appreciating about this one. Even when I was really frustrated with some of the episodes, one of the things that I liked about it was that it was, again, adding another facet to what it means to be a unit of Marvel Video Entertainment.
Yes, yes.
That was one of the things that I liked about it. Even when my honk-o-meter was awfully high, I will say, I did definitely have some appreciation for that and you know, what kind of like what directions and things we were going with. This was a thing that I was able to get from Lisa. She has sent a dispatch from afar, and she said, and the note that she has left me says, if I had to rank the shows so far using the criteria, they move the football along the MCU field without devolving into Calvin Ball. Her ranking is as follows. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's very bold. Loki, WandaVision, and then What If? And I think I would agree with those, mostly because it feels like the impact, like as far as being impactful on the MCU going forward, at least right now, it feels like Falcon and the Winter Soldier is one of the biggest, mostly for Sam. So that would probably also be my listing as well. I might, depending on the day, well, let's be honest, depending on how recently I've watched the fifth episode of the first season of Loki, I might rank Loki first and then the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, only because we know what kind of setup we got with Loki that's going to propel us into phase four of the MCU. So Don, I'm going to ask you for your ranking as well. Move the football along the MCU field without devolving into Calvin Ball. Give us your list.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's, I think that's an interesting take, and I can understand why Lisa did that, but
it's what she scribbled just, down on a note. She was in a hurry. Yeah, there was a murder lizard at the door, you know, yes. With a headdress on. What was she to do?
Yes.
Get in, losers. Let's go swamping.
Yes, exactly. I'll just give you my list of what I thought were the best of the series, the ranking, the most impactful to me personally, because I don't know where they're going, so I can't really say. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that's something that I can do. But I will say, in terms of impact to me and expanding my own mind about what the MCU could do, that would certainly be Loki.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, that's the whole multiverse right there.
Yeah.
And that's obviously where they're going in phase four. The details, I don't know.
Right.
The other one I would say, especially for the short term and the plans that we know that we have, I guess, that would be WandaVision.
That'd be WandaVision, because, right?
Yeah, WandaVision would be number two. And I think Falcon and the Winter Soldier would be number three because of the new Captain America, and also because it was just such an awesome series.
See, I feel like new Captain America should be higher on that list. That's all.
Right. But I know the other two, you know, introducing Kang in a TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Woof. I mean, you know, Thanos steps aside. Kang's going to be the new big bad. Right. So
all I can hear in the back of my head is us poo-pooing that and going, well, who's going to be in the Citadel at the end of time, and us going, well, it's not like it's going to be Kang. I mean, they wouldn't do that in a TV show. And
exactly.
Guess what, kids? Yeah.
Technically, it was not Kang. It was He Who Remains, possibly Immortus. But no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Nathan, I can hear your glasses slipping down your nose. You better push them up there.
Yes. No, I can hear the rubber band around his glasses tightening. So that's what I would do it. And obviously, last on that list is What If, because one, mm-hmm. it didn't have as big an impact to me personally. And yeah. I have no idea where this is going. I am like at a loss as to what the Shield they're going to do in season two.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what that means for the multiverse.
Well, Nathan, now I have two questions for you. Cause first is, pick a criteria and then rank the four shows we've had so far. And then I want to get a little bit into season two before we wrap up. So go ahead and give us your list.
Guys, you guys are wonderful. I love y'all, but you guys overthink things way too much.
That's why
I think
we're
in
here,
terms of
Nathan.
Actually, like, my ranking hasn't changed since the last time you asked me this question. Loki at the top, mm-hmm. just a terrifically executed series all around, kicked open the door to the multiverse. WandaVision second, self-contained story, really successful, interesting, okay. emotional, also laid the groundwork for some big changes. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I loved it to death. It's not entirely successful, but not for lack of trying or ambition. Mm-hmm. And then this, like I said, it's dessert. It's fun. It's little snack-sized Marvel. I'd love to see them go. I don't mean to diss on them, because having gone and written very bad screenplays that no one will or should ever read, it's hard to tell a story efficiently in that little screen time. They do incredible job, but they needed, the episodes needed to be about 15 minutes longer so that they could have not just the end of the second act, but they could actually get to the end of the third act on some of them.
My theory on that is, and this is from earlier during this stretch of podcasting when we were talking about What If, was that some of these maybe get, because we know there's a season two, and so that maybe some of these get picked up as like the rest of the rest of that particular episode gets picked up and run with in season two. So maybe we find out more. And that, like, that's still sort of my hope, just because some of those are really interesting and I would really like if we could revisit some of these. I really like the idea of finding out what Nick Fury and Loki talk about when it's the Loki that has just come to Earth for the first time ever, not the Loki that we got in the series. I think that would be a lot of fun. So my list is, like I said, depending on the day, either Loki or Falcon and the Winter Soldier at the top, because I feel like a new Captain America, the return of Captain America, whatever form he takes, right? Whether it was Bucky or whether it was Sam, whoever comes back and carries the shield, like that's a huge, I feel like that's a huge deal and that's really impactful. And I think that that sometimes gets lost in the other stuff that happened in the other series. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch going forward. And especially because it's Sam, I'm even more excited about it because I love Sam. So depending on the day, it would be the Falcon and the Winter Soldier can't be friends. It might be maybe it's Loki. Like it depends, you know, on the day. One of those would be at the top of my list. I really appreciated WandaVision for what it did and for how it reeled everybody into watching Marvel television. And I also really like the parts of What If that I liked, I really, really liked. As a whole, I think Loki probably holds the place dearest in my heart, just because it was, it took really big swings and it was weird and it was funny and there was so much charm in all of it that it was just delightful.
Do you feel it's the most rewatchable?
Absolutely. Without question.
Yeah. So the reason why I bring this up is for the last three nights, I go into the because I'm downstairs, I'm on the computer nerding out or playing video games or whatever. And I go upstairs. My wife likes to watch TV in bed. We have another TV in the master bedroom. And our dog likes to lay up with mom, you know, and under his little banky and listen to the TV and snuggle with mom or whatever. I go in there. And the last three nights, she's been rewatching, I think for the third time, Loki.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that is appropriate timing to discover this for this.
No, Loki's coming back. Yes.
I asked her about it today when we were out walking the dog, and she said, that's just, it's so rewatchable.
I think it is. And, you know, like one of the things I appreciated about WandaVision was its like for being the story that it was, it is pretty self-contained. So you don't have to have a bunch of other information or know what comes after it in order to appreciate WandaVision for what it is. And I do like that. I'm curious what you hope for and what you expect out of What If. And Don, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, well, it's like I said earlier, I have no idea where they're going with this. My fear is that they do the same thing they did this season. We get, you know, X number of where the Shield or these episodes going.
Mm-hmm.
And then they try to wrap it up in a bow in the end with some other cosmic thing. But after they ended this season in episode 9 with what they did, How do they do something different in that? Because if it's more of these more of this bad fan fiction stuff, that just doesn't interest me. I want some more continuity.
So you're hoping
I don't just want a sweet little dessert bits.
Okay.
You know, I want a real brulee with some thickness that's, you know, has a nice carbonizing sear to it.
I can appreciate that.
You know, not just a fruit nut plate.
Guys, this isn't about that. That isn't what this show is about.
Nathan, have you listened to me and Don's other show?
I know.
This is what we do, my dear. This is how we roll.
I'm about to take you guys to the woodshed, and I'm sorry.
That's fine.
On all the weeks that I've been out, like mowing the lawn or jogging and listening to this podcast, whenever I hear you guys say things like, "Who's the watcher talking to?" Guys.
But that was a really interesting, like, as soon as someone said that, that was all I could think about.
It is an interesting question, but it's the wrong question. It's like saying, who is Rod Serling talking to in the Twilight Zone?
Well, Rod Serling's talking to me. I know that.
Yeah. This show isn't about moving the Marvel Universe forward narratively like the others are. It's going to echo that in its structure because that's what people come to expect. And Marvel's like, well, we got to play the hits.
Yeah.
This is a show about us, the viewers, and our relationship to these stories. It is a love letter from Marvel to us. It's basically Marvel saying, we love you guys. We wouldn't have made fabulous, ungodly scads of money without you. So here's a bunch of people that you like doing fun things and all wrapped up in a story about being someone who loves stories. Because the part of the series that I think I loved most, a lot of these episodes gave me great joy in a time of great stress, but this part I loved most is at the very end of the last episode when Natasha from the Ruined Earth is alone in the pub with the Watcher. And she's like, you really loved watching my world die, didn't you? I bet you got out the popcorn. And the Watcher looks hurt and stricken. And he says, no, you don't understand. To me, your stories are everything. And that's when I got it. Guys, we are the Watchers. You guys were wondering, like, where are the other Watchers? It's us. We are the Watchers. We are
the Watchers.
We love these characters. We get invested in their fates. We get interested in their stories. We want to see what happens to them. We want good things for them, but we cannot intervene. And the Watcher in the series is unique in that he can. He is existing inside the universe. We are outside it. Mm-hmm. But he is meant to be a stand-in for us. And it works in part because I believe Jeffrey Wright is a huge comic book fan himself. So he can invest that line. I mean, he's an amazing actor. He could do it even if he wasn't a comic book fan. But they deliberately have the Watcher in those last two episodes be the audience stand-in, like where Clint and Natasha are combing through the archives and he's like, it's right there. The box is right there. My second favorite Watcher moment of the entire series. But yeah, so this is a series that isn't about, well, let's set up the next cool thing for this movie you're going to see.
Yeah.
It's Marvel taking a break, taking a breather and saying, this is a show about stories and what they mean to us.
Okay, so if that was your second favorite Watcher, then what's your favorite Watcher moment?
Oh, like I said, my favorite is just that moment when his voice almost breaks and he's just like, your stories are everything to me.
Okay, that's your favorite. Okay,
yeah.
So Don, how about you?
I think that's a good take on it that, we are the people we were looking for, that kind of thing. I would agree, Nathan, it's a love letter in a way to the Marvel audience, but it's that marvelous poop sandwich that they're serving us in a way. I mean, it's like you said, what Marvel did with the What If stories before, it was like, oh, you think you can do better? Here, let me ruin this world for you and make you sad. It's kind of a two-edged sword doing that. It's not just a love letter. It's their, it's an abusive relationship kind of thing. So,
except wait. The T'Challa Lord episode is unquestionably better in every single respect than the Marvel Universe that we get. I mean, maybe the fact that like the collector has Captain America's shield and Thor's hammer in his collection suggests that maybe things didn't go so great on Earth. But everybody, yeah. You know, Thanos, the destroyer of the galaxy, turns into a loving dad. T'Challa's reunited with his family. Peter Quill is mopping floors in a Dairy Queen, as he always should have been. You can't really argue that at least every single one of these shows is like, see, the main continuity was better. No. And that's one of the reasons I think the second episode works so well as a love letter to, and a goodbye to Chadwick Boseman, because it lets you visit this lovely little world where, just like apparently he did in real life, Chadwick Boseman's character elevates everyone around him just by being there.
Yes.
Yeah. I would give you that, but it's not the majority of the episodes being like that.
True, true. There are a lot of "and then everybody died" episodes.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of those.
I would say the same. I hope that we get something interesting. I don't know what they're going to do with it in the second season. I hope that it's something that's going to be fun and something that's going to be interesting and entertaining. I think I'll probably like the second season better because I'll go in just presuming that we're going to get one massive unit of entertainment by the time we're all done. So I do know, I think it's been confirmed we get more Captain Carter. So yes. I'm on board for that.
That's all I want. More Captain Carter. Oh, and Deadpool. Bring Ryan Reynolds in. You know he's ready for it.
And just like that, Nathan gave me my birthday present a month early. Okay, so I'm just going to think about that the rest of the time because that would be amazing. I would love if we could get a Deadpool episode. That would be a really nice way to bring him into the universe, in my opinion. I want to make sure that we get like some final thoughts in here before we're completely finished. But I will say that one of the things that I'm looking forward to, not just now, but the "what if" theme that we've had with these episodes named "What If" is going to continue. And I just want to give people a little sneaky peeky here because Hawkeye is coming. And the Hawkeye series that we're getting is based on the Matt Fraction, David Aja Hawkeye run from 2015, I think.
2015, yeah.
Which Don has not read. So
Don, get on that, so, bro.
No,
bro, you get on that, bro. You get on that. It's good, bro.
So Don and his tracksuit are gonna show up each week, and Lisa. So next time around, what if Lisa and Kelly are the professor and we take Don to Reilly school? That's what's gonna happen. So I just want to set that up for people in case you missed that before when we all discovered.
And you know, I'm fine with that. That way I don't have to have 50 Wikipedia pages up in the browser. So I can answer questions.
One of the things I'm looking forward to with Hawkeye is seeing how that comes to life, how that comes off the page. Because like some of the stuff that we've gotten before has been exciting in different ways. Like it was really fun to see the X-Men come to life. It was really fun to see physical manifestations of Thor and Captain America and Iron Man and all of these people. And so I can't wait to see what the tracksuit Draculas look like. I can't wait to see Pizza Dog. I can't wait to spend some actual time with Kate Bishop. I think that's gonna be really fun. So I'm super looking forward to where that's going to go, because we also know we've got some parameters around that series based on some of the post-credit stuff and some of the side notes that we've gotten from some of the other Marvel properties that have come before this. So it's going to be very interesting to see how all that ends up, I think.
Florence Pugh is going to show up and awesome up the joint. I mean, that alone, having seen Black Widow, is reason to be excited.
Exactly. Yes. Did you see Black Widow? You're going to like Hawkeye. That's basically where I'm at. That one, I think it's going to be a blast. I'm super looking forward to it. I think it's, I'm super jazzed. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm definitely looking forward to that one. I hope that it lives up to my expectations. Because honestly, like if they're just based on being at least as good as the comic book, that's still a really, really high bar. So we'll see how that goes. Don, do you have any final thoughts for us tonight?
The final thought that I have is I always think about our wonderful listeners as we come to a close. And I wanted to thank people for feedback and suggestions in into the Twitterverse there, some of them this week. And yes. I just wanted to thank our fans also for just keeping it zany. And cracking us up every week. I'm not sure when our next episode is going to be because schedules are death. And we're going to come up with something to tide us over.
Yes.
Through the holidays.
And we are taking those suggestions. So yes, you can get us at I Want My MCU TV on Twitter. You can email us at mcutv@theincomparable.com and definitely let us know.
And if you like Nathan joining us for the wrap-up episode as much as personally I have every time
we've
done this, please let us have him for the wrap-up for Hawkeye too, because I want him to also pummel.
Oh,
that's
no.
That's up anything to Nathan.
But that, I'll be all like, so Marvel's worked with Shane Black, and then they went and made a Shane Black movie without Shane Black. Do you think that was awkward?
Yep.
So, I want to give extra special shout outs to Swampkit and Gary and Swampkit and Alex, whose fandom knows no bounds. Because as I told you before, they are members of The Incomparable, and they showed up in the member Slack and have changed their display names in the member Slack to Swampkit and Gary and Swampkit and Alex. And it makes me so happy. So all you have to do to get a shout out on the show, this is a very high bar and it's very complicated. So get a pen, go on Twitter and talk to us.
Yeah.
That's it. Because I'm here to tell you, like,
and,
I lifted.
And if you want bonus points, you too can become an incomparable member.
And then you can talk to us directly and give us your Looney Tune theories straight away. You can inject them straight into our DMs. It's great. I want to give a shout out to Swampkit and Jody, who gave me the battle cry that opened the episode, Swamp Kittens Assemble. So thank you for that, Jody. I want to thank Swampkit and Gary, as always, who's pitching that we should have a chat about Into the Spider-Verse as something that we talk about in the meantime. And shout out to Swamp Kitten Nicholas, who replied and was very, very entertained by, I think it was Lisa's description of tiny little beautiful ectomorph Steve. So thanks to all of you. Thanks to everybody who has come along with us on all of these. We appreciate you so much, Swamp Kittens. And one of the biggest things we appreciate about you is that you let us call you Swamp Kittens, because it makes us very happy. So thanks for all of that. And Nathan, thank you so much for coming and joining us. I really like having you come on and help us wrap some stuff up and give us a dose of perspective here at the end.
Well, thank you guys very much. It's always a pleasure to be here, and I'm always grateful to be invited. And now I'm off to get a bicep tattoo that reads science.
Science.
Viva Las Vegas.
There you go.
I can't beat that, y'all. Thank you so much to Nathan for being here, Don. As always, it's a delight to have you. Thank you to Lisa, who came and complained about some of these with us and came and enjoyed the rest of them with us. And thanks to all of you for listening. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it. So we will... I will tell you, MCU TV will return.
Too bad this might spell the end of the world, but that's a story for another day. Oh, yeah.